Hello, my name is Bill Cummings, and you're listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is In The TV recommend show.
Greetings and welcome to episode 15 of Show Me Magic, a God Is In The TV zine.co.uk new music podcast. My name is Bill Cummings, and today I'm here with Jim. How you doing, Jim?
I'm all right. How are you, Bill?
Not too bad. It's very hot here, very hot.
It is. It's only just sort of happened this morning. I sort of went out on my walk this morning and I wasn't properly attired, really. And it was a little bit on the warm side. I could have stayed in the park most of the day, I think. But there you go, things to do. But yeah, summer's arrived.
Yep. Hopefully things will be opening up a bit more, although it's a tricky one, isn't it? I've seen a few announcements today about pubs reopening in England, yep. Things like that. But yeah. You have to convince people to go out, don't you? Especially to smaller venues and cinema. Some guy on the TV news was going on about cinema earlier and he said it'd be 20% capacity. I was like, oh, God. Yeah. Be a bit weird.
I mean, in the cinema or in my town, then that would probably be regarded as full if it was 20% capacity. they're talking about the pubs here in England being open on the 4th of July, but I think that's only meant to be outside, really. But
okay.
It's just still a bit iffy, if you ask me. I was at the Seaside weekend. They were already doing it. They were already doing out takeaway for outside, but they've been doing it in London as well last week. So I think some of them have just been getting on with it. I don't know whether this means that they can go inside now, only a certain amount of people at a time maybe, but that'll just be carnage. I don't get it.
It's dubious, isn't it? Because it hasn't actually gone away. Obviously, it's good news that the figures have gone down, but it still hasn't gone away. So you've got to be careful still.
Exactly. I'm not going to be rushing to my local
wedding. No, that's it. That's what I mean. You can open these things, but will people actually go out to them? You know, that's the tricky part. And the one that worries me is venues, And as we were talking about before, they said Music Venue Trust are after 50 million from the government for venues to stay open. Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like a drop in the ocean to me, to be honest.
But doesn't it? If it's a £5.2 billion industry, it's a 50 million quid, it's not much of an advance, is it? Just advance on your pocket money to keep your bloody afloat.
Yeah, when you think about it, how much music brings into this country, then they should do something. Anyway, crack on with the new music. I'm going to kick off this week's podcast, and my first track is Melon, and this is Mendrin.
Gwastraffi amser,
Melon, this is probably about 3 or 4 months old now, unfortunately, but I kind of cheated. They've got a new video for it, so I cheated to choose it as recent music. But I really like Melon. They're a sort of a Cardiff-based band based around the frontman Griff Glynn and a guy called Will Barrett, and they lend a sort of whimsy and a charm and an artfulness to Welsh music, really. And it reminds me of things like Squeeze, maybe, and Sid Barrett, maybe. And they're quite fun live as well. They when I saw them at Soon Festival last year, they kind of descended into like a madness kind of specials, saxophone, horns, breakdown, you know, at the end. So there's more to them than this track, I'd say. But I really like the riff. It's quite playful, and also the vocals are quite playful as well. If you watch the video as well, it's a bit barking. Griff says that Medrin is quite a difficult word to translate. I think of it as someone who just talks drivel over and over again, which could apply to politicians, your boss, your friends, your family, perhaps even yourself. Definitely people in positions of power on the news cycle. So there you go.
That's weird, actually, because that's the first one you sent me. So I watched the video. Like you said, it's a bonkers video, and in a good way. And then obviously they kind of did the bits of the lyrics of the chorus in like kind of almost like those numbers and stuff you get on the fridges. So I thought I don't want to be doing my day job work, so I'll Google Translate what they're actually saying.
Yeah.
So and when I put this the name of the song, was it Mudrin?
Yeah.
That comes out as a worm.
The thing is with Welsh, words can have multiple translations, you know. I thought they were. I actually interviewed the guy at Zoom last year, and I said to him, "Oh, you called yellow, because I thought melon, you know, it's just a different spelling." But he said it's yellow mill.
Yeah, that's what that came out right. I did that as well. Yeah, yellow mill.
But there's an Adwaith album called Melon, which is yellow, you know. But yeah, it's weird with Welsh. Some of the translations aren't always bob on. But yeah, basically, I just think it's somebody talking verbal diarrhea, to be honest.
Well, this is it.
Absolute nonsense.
I mean, it's sort of slightly made. I say, applause, please, for the web you have knitted. Please commend the trap you have created to destroy every living being and the hope of anyone. And then there's the constant refrain where it says wasting time, which is ironic, really, because that's exactly what I was doing. But I loved it. I thought it was a brilliant song.
Yeah, it's great fun.
The reason I did it, I was constantly rewinding the video and playing the chorus over and over again. And in the end, I was like humming it in my. I loved that.
They're very infectious and tuneful, and they're not all their stuff is in Welsh language either. They are bilingual, so
that's funny. I mean,
a very promising band, I think.
If I was going to do a lazy comparison, I'd say Sing for Animals.
Yeah.
But bloody lazy. But that's kind of just that. It's kind of that sort of that feel about it. Anyway, I mean, I think that's probably just because it's sort of an indie music.
I think
language, which is, you know, I didn't want to say it, but to be honest with you, I couldn't, you know, because they're quite, you sort of quite unique as well, sort of thing. It's kind of, I thought there's maybe kind of like a 60s kind of production almost at the beginning. It was kind of not, you know, it was a bit not quite so sheen. There wasn't such a sheen on it. But having said that, I listened to it again just through just a streaming service, and it was really, really loud, compared to like the previous songs that I've been listening to. So they've mastered it at one hell of a volume. So that's not a bad thing necessarily, but it was just a bit of a surprise. But yeah.
No, the Super Furries things make sense because Griff, who's the singer, his family's from North Wales, and there's a heavy North Wales influence on Super Furries. And also, any kind of guitar band from Wales is going to get compared to the Super Furry Animals. And there is a lot of that in there. But I think, as you said, there's also a 60s and a 70s thing with these guys. Heavy. And they play he plays saxophone as well. So there's that extra element to them. Yeah. That makes them, you know, more than just a typical four blokes in a band with guitars kind of thing. What are you giving it, Jim?
I'm going to give it an 8.5.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to go 8 as well, yeah. Good cracking start to the show. And you're going to follow it up with a known quantity here.
Yes, I know. I always thought about maybe not bringing this one up because it's they're huge now. But to be honest with you, I just think also that the message in the song is quite important and almost like weirdly prescient, because this is obviously not been written during lockdown. This is all recorded sort of maybe even last year. This is a band called Idols, and this is Grounds.
You will not catch me staring at the sun, not sucking on a dum-dum, not turning round to run. No hallelujahs and no kingdom comes. So you will not catch me staring at the sun. Do you hear that front door? That's the sound of strength in numbers. Fee, fee, fi, fi, fo, fo, fum. I smell the blood of a million sons, a million daughters from 100,000 guns, not taught by our teachers on our curriculum. Do you hear that thunder? That's the sound of strength in numbers. Single thing has ever been mended by you standing there and saying you're offended. Go ahead, tell them what I've intended. I'll say what I mean, do what I love, and fucking send it. Do you hear that thunder? That's the sound of strength in numbers. There's nothing brave or nothing useful. You scrolling your aggro shit on the walls of the cubicle, saying my race and class ain't suitable. So I raise my pink fist and say black is beautiful. Do you hear that front door? That's the sound of strength in numbers.
Idols Grounds. I don't think there's going to be many people that are listening to this pod that won't have heard of Idols. I'll be very, very surprised unless you're living in some kind of hut on the Outer Hebrides or something. I love this because it more in vain of the kind of Colossus from their second album, Joy is an Act of Resistance, which is kind of, it's when they go a little bit deranged. The guitar goes a little bit sort of unhinged, and that kind of, and then there's also a keyboard effects constant through it, sort of electronic sample sort of thing. And it's when they get really angry that I like it. So whereas Mr. Motivator was a bit kind of, you know, maybe a little bit Idols by Number, it's kind of you know, and it's very positive. But I always found the riff a little bit similar to stuff they'd been doing on the second album. Whereas this, whilst has that similar kind of feeling to Colossus, which is one of my favourite Idol songs, and there's just a really good message about it, you know, through it as well, you know, kind of weirdly at the end, you know, I would raise my pink fist and say black is beautiful. So, and this is way before any of this has happened. So I think it was quite important, you know, it's quite weird. Maybe this is why they chose this particular single. Maybe it wasn't going to be the next one or whatever, but it's just what's good about Idols as well. And what's sort of important. And it also feels a bit like a bit of a riposte, but a response to kind of the haters, you know, a sideswipe to people. They mentioned the fact, you know, is my class not good enough for you? So it's a bit of a sideswipe to Sleaford. Yeah. So we love that. So, it's just a really good song. And I'm quite excited about the album now because I was like, not concerned, but you thought, is it going to be a bit kind of Idols by Numbers? Have they done it a bit quick after the success of their second album? But yeah, what do you reckon?
I like the verses. I like the way it's sort of stripped back and the drums. I put it's like 100 Grant Mitchell's panel beating on onto Cars, you know.
That doesn't vary too often with them, does it? No.
but it's all stripped back, isn't it? It's stripped back, and there's that kind of menacing guitar riff.
Exactly.
It's almost like a scalpel, you know. I quite like that. And but I said to you before, it was reminding me a little bit of Future of the Left, which surprised me.
Because they're
sort of like a band who rely a lot on percussion and. I like the way it stomps around as kind of spewing a polemic, isn't he? And I put down race, class, and unity. I enjoyed it up until the chorus, and the chorus is just a bit. It's interesting because you said you liked the sort of noisiness of it. That was the bit that it kind of lost me, I think.
You know,
when it goes into like a discordant chorus, and then and then the guitars went a bit discordant. I didn't really like that. I just felt like it lost its aim then.
I like the different sort of, say, the lion shade of it, the kind of different texture. It's a bit kind of grunge, that kind of quiet, loud thing. But in a sense, it's not easy. But you know, it's that kind of thing. And I do really like the thing about the verses. It's kind of quiet with that kind of constant doo-doo-doo sort of thing, which just very repetitive. But it almost like makes it build up to something.
I put that the guitars were like falling down upstairs rather than downstairs.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like doo-doo-doo-doo. Yeah, like you said, they're almost like menacing, weren't they? Like Hammer Horror. I used that comparison before, but yeah, a little bit sort of menacing.
Which is what I do like.
I like the verse. I just didn't feel like it took off in the chorus. I really like the bit where he's sort of talking, but when he goes into that growly shout, I just don't know. He loses me a little bit. But there were some good lines in it, like you said. The one about, there's not a single thing that's ever been mended by you standing there saying you're offended. And I quite like that.
Yeah,
that's quite a like swipe at sort of like Twitter trolls and stuff like that, isn't it? I suppose. People, you know, taking offense and stuff like on Twitter to nothing, basically. And you know, being offended on its own doesn't really prove or solve anything.
I kind of almost get the impression that there's, you know, he will get his rage and his annoyance at the way society is and the way maybe the music industry and other bands having a pop because they don't like something. But it's like, you don't necessarily find them coming back, you know, they don't suddenly go, well, as a riposte, whoever said what, you know.
Yeah.
That's
a very hip-hop thing to do, isn't it? It's like Stormzy released a lot of, like, clapback tracks, didn't he, you know, to certain other rappers and stuff who were, because he was successful, they were sort of having a go at him to try and, you know, feed off his success, you know, so.
But it does seem a bit like that.
And maybe there is a bit of that with Idols because they've become successful or, you know, to a certain level. There's a lot of other bands who sort of maybe a bit pissed off about that. I've got a mixed feeling on Idols generally because I feel like the first album had more wit to it. And the second album was a bit too much like some guy charging around in a bull some guy charging around like a bull in a china shop, you know. Mm-hmm. I just felt it was a bit too like, I like all the messages, but I just felt like it was a bit too lack of nuance, a little bit too much like just hammering a chestnut, you know, with a big mallet. That's how I felt.
That's fine.
Whereas the first album had more wit, I felt like.
It's weird though, because I just feel completely the opposite way around. I feel Brutalism was really just, I mean, there are obviously good, some good bits and, you know, lines. There are good songs. It's not, I don't dislike it as an album at all, but I just found that there was a lot more wit in something like Never Fight a Man with a Perm or Great. I mean, there are some, I mean, there's some really heavy things, songs like Dune, but then there's all, and then there's obviously important
messages. It's subjective, isn't it? It's subjective.
But yeah. It's just really weird because I just find it the opposite way around. I think there's a lot of wit and a lot of humour and but a good message as well. And so I really like the songs on Joy as well. So it's just funny.
There's good songs on it. I just felt like the sloganeering, I felt like, just almost took over a little bit for me anyway. Maybe I hadn't listened to it enough. Maybe I didn't listen to it enough.
Maybe that's what some people do have a problem with. I don't know. You know,
yeah, some people accuse them of, like, you know, virtue signaling stuff like that with the big slogans. But then on the other hand, I do like the fact that they're trying to get over positive messages, you know. So I'm kind of mixed on Idols, you know. But yeah. I feel like it's good that they've kind of built a fan base for themselves, and they're putting over positive messages. And but I do feel like there's something, like we talked about Sleaford Mods before, I feel like there's a similar sort of thing with Idols in a different way, though. But there's probably more nuance to Idols, I'd say. But I just feel like sometimes when he goes for that kind of slogan and that huge moment vocally, it just it grates on me personally a little bit.
Fair enough.
But it's just a subjective thing, maybe, you know? I mean, with Mr. Motivator, I just found that, to be honest, like you said, it was a bit like Idols by Numbers. I mean, I literally felt like it was just like, you know, an exercise video, to be honest.
Well, it's funny, really, because
got more weight to it, I'd say.
Well, I say, there's the AF gang thing that's on Facebook that was set up by Idols fans that's now like a, you know, tens of thousands of people get involved with this thing now. But there was quite a lot of, like, people saying that they weren't necessarily the biggest fans of Moments. Some saying they were really, really disappointed. And the general feedback and consensus seems to be that this Grounds is much better and they're a bit more about it. But there are some even that I've read that said they just genuinely didn't like Joy as an Active Resistance at all. They didn't think it was as good as Brutalism. And actually they thought there was a backward step. So it's each to their own, you know. A lot of people loved it. And hence it was a top 10 or at least top 10, top 5.
What they're doing is they're using their position to get out positive messages, and that's a good thing. Which is a good thing, yeah. But the criticism is it performative? You know what I mean? It's like, are they snogging each other because they're, you know, trying to tackle homophobia, or is it a performance? That's the question. I haven't got an answer to that. And I don't have a strong feeling on it, to be honest.
No.
I like the fact that they're out there, and I like the fact that they've built a, you know, it seems to be a positive community. So that's quite rare for a guitar band these days. So we should celebrate that.
Suppose if it is positive, then at the very least, what they're doing is they are actually almost like trying to, you know, create a talking point, maybe anger people, or at least make people think, well, you know, these are straight men, but, you know, they do love each other as blokes, and, you know, okay, yeah, because you don't, you know, but if that's one way of putting out this message, like, you know, in Samaritans, I kissed them and I liked it, you know, in these days, you know, what does it really matter anyway? So,
no, it doesn't matter at all, but I suppose I've seen other people who are critics of them who are gay say, well, why are they doing that? It's almost like, you know, you know what I mean? But I can't speak on that issue, you know. The fact that they're challenging male stereotypes.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It is that challenging of it. And it's.
Yeah, because, you know,
it needs to be done.
We don't all fit into boxes, do we? We don't all fit into labels. That's what
that's
I definitely don't.
It's not this contradiction, but it's like this paradox between. I think it was. Is it Stuart Lee or maybe Charlie Brooker? Someone said, you know, to paraphrase, that they found the fact that there was such a positive message and a message of love from something like Danny Nedelko in something so loud and actually angry as well. So, and it's kind of that weird thing where he's literally shouting the house down. But his actual content is about, sort of like, say, I unify.
Yeah, there's that kind of like contradiction, isn't it? Which reminds me a little bit of Dead Kennedys in a different way.
Yes, yeah,
you know what I mean? Where they like sing about, you know, really important social issues, but in a really angry kind of way. Like, but the social issues are quite left wing. Do you know what I mean? If that makes sense, which isn't always typical of punk music, is it? You know, some of it's quite, you know, on the right, really, or has been in the past. Anyway, scores. I'm going to go for a bit of a weasel score here because I do like the verses, but the chorus didn't quite take off for me. 6.5. You?
7.5.
This is Hermetic Delight, and this is Glass Dancers.
And she walks into deep.
Hermetic Delight, a French band, surprisingly, which might surprise you. Yeah, they've been around since the end of the 2000s, apparently. I'd never heard of them until a couple of weeks ago. They're from Strasbourg, and they're influenced by the likes of Susie and the Banshees, Bauhaus, Pixies, Cure. I was getting more of a sort of, Goldfrapp kind of Eurythmics maybe sense to this one. And this is the one that kind of struck me because I just like the way it sort of swoops. And it's like a swirl of kind of 80s, early 90s. There's elements of post-punk, there's elements of synthwave. And I like the sort of evocative loops with the kind of keyboards and the guitars. And then the vocals are quite enigmatic as well. And I quite like the refrain. It's like a powerhouse vocal, really. I mean, she sings, come on, let me push away the demons from my head, which, you know, I kind of...
You don't relate to that.
Yeah, I can relate to that one, yeah. And I like the way the horns come in as well, surprisingly, at the end. I mean, it probably is slightly long because when I did listen to it again, I was like, yeah, it does go on a little bit. But I quite like it because it's a gem, because I think... I actually looked on their Spotify and it's actually only been listened to about 1,000 times. And I was like, actually, this is a really good song, you know? So, yeah, I enjoy it. And I think there's something to them. And they've released the whole album with this guy called Charles Rowell from the Crocodiles on production. And apparently Anna Calvi has something to do with them as well. She's helping them. Yeah, so this band just came to me from this new PR who seems to specialise in French music. He sent me another French band who I was considering for last week, you know, the 60s ones I sent you, Jim. But I like this, and there's something to them, and a bit of a uncovered gem, I think, a little gem that nobody's heard of, and I kind of like that.
You know. Yeah, I didn't mind it. It was, again, it's sort of one of those things that I would necessarily, you know, choose to listen to.
It's up my street, I suppose.
It is up your street. And I did really like the guitar in it, the nice, really nice sort of delayed guitar that goes in there. That was quite 80s. And what it really reminded me, I don't know why, when I was listening to it, was Nick Kershaw. I kind of imagined myself being a kid again and watching Nick Kershaw on Top of the Pops. Don't ask me why, because it wasn't really overtly 80s, but it just sort of had that feel.
Yeah, it's got a touch of 80s about it, isn't it?
Been written like maybe something
that... And the melodrama of her voice as well, I think.
Yeah, well, I kind of got sort of a St. Vincent thing about her. I don't know.
Interesting, yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, with that theatrical sort of side of it, you're always going to sort of get an element of Kate Bush in there, but which I was kind of trying to maybe think that, get rid of that, but
stay away from the obvious comparisons after last week.
Otherwise, we'll get down. But I just felt like it was kind of something that may have been written now that could almost be put on as like a new song to be put in something like Ashes to Ashes or something like that.
I like it. I'm going to give it a 7.
I'm feeling generous. Let's give that 7 just for the fun. I like the guitars on that.
All right, over to another one of your choices, Jim. Another band that I've never heard of.
This is a band called The Long Faces, and this is Sail Away. Thank you. was The Long Faces and Sail Away. One thing that sort of, you know, there was a lot of bands that have some really iffy band names for me. And, you know, if it's not chucking a V in, it's just being deliberately obtuse about it. But The Long Faces, you know, is pretty much, I'm almost surprised that there hasn't been a big enough band that had that name. But it's almost like you're taking two names that exist and then sticking them together. The fact that part of the name is the Faces.
What, the long blondes and the Faces?
Well, you could have that, exactly. Well, I had the Long Pigs and the Small Faces, which I said them. I thought they're the two that I was thinking of, because you almost could have pushed those two together and almost had that, because the guitars were quite chaotic in places, a bit like the Long Pigs. They kind of had that kind of, whereas it was almost like, you know, in a standard indie kind of song with this kind of element of chaos. Whereas, and then apparently a guy that basically wanted to be Morrissey as a child. I think that's probably one of the most Morrissey voices that I've ever not come out of Morrissey, which isn't a bad thing. It's a little bit of a direct, it's not even a comparison. It basically sounds like Morrissey. But
well, they're not the first band, though, like that. There's a few Swedish bands who specialised in sounding like Morrissey, so it's not...
Well, I know. It was quite surprising when this first came in. I wasn't expecting to sound quite so... considering, well, he's from Merseyside, so I don't know whether that slightly plays into, obviously, Morrissey being from Manchester. But, yeah, it's sort of... The album is called Documentaries, which is out on the 10th of July. This is, I think it's the second single of it. I thought it was going to be really straight ahead when I first listened to it, but then the kind of slightly sort of disjointed, unhinged guitars came in, which sort of were then, I thought, well, that's sort of a bit kind of like the Long Pigs, and maybe, but there was also that kind of classic, almost 60s, pop song that was underneath it, which is kind of the Small Faces.
Yeah.
I mean, because the Faces were a bit more of a, you know, sort of more of a rhythm and blues-ish sort of band with Rod Stewart and Ronnie Wood. But, yeah, I thought it was pretty good. They sort of intrigued me, really, to be honest with you. Part of it was kind of very formulaic and part of it was kind of a bit weird. It's almost like they two didn't go together to a certain degree, but then it just seemed to fit once it all...
Yeah.
But, yeah.
As it went along. Yeah. I like the flamboyant vocals, you know. I like a flamboyant vocal. And as you say, it's very Morrissey. I was also getting a touch of Orange Juice, you know. Far be it from me to make comparisons.
Yeah.
But yeah, the kind of...
Edward Collins there, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, new wave kind of percussion and bass lines and stuff I'm getting. And I like the way the guitars sort of shimmer. Like rain down a window pane, I put. I don't know where I got that from. Is it unique? I'm not sure, but it's interesting. I would listen to more, and I quite liked the vocal. It was interesting.
It's actually an EP, self-released EP, so this documentary is not an album that's going to be on the 10th of July. They've been going around for a few years now, but only with a couple of singles, so it's probably fairly early days and everything. But commenting on their lead single, Sail Away, they say, Sail Away manifested itself through a series of instrumental jams spanning several years of reinterpretation. Mm. We like to think we explored every dimension of that four-bar phrase. We've done funk speed Sail Away, punks, ska punk Sail Away, even disastrously Sail Away in a major key. The emphasis is based on the incessant repetition of that basic idea, with the vain hope that a song might spring from its reprisal, sort of like flogging a dead horse back to life.
I quite like that. They've done it in all different styles and then seen how it works. Yeah. It sounds like at the end they've done a different style, doesn't it? Like jammed them all together. It sounds funny.
Yeah.
It's like, just sod it. Oh, we've done it in every style. Check the kitchen sink in. Yeah. Exactly. Let's do all the styles at once, you know. Just check it all. I liked it. Yeah. I'll give it a 7. I'll give it a 7, another 7, another strong 7.
Yeah, same with me. I think that's a 7.
Back to me again, isn't it?
To you.
To me, yeah, I wasn't. I've been thinking about choosing this for a couple of weeks, but it's difficult when you've only got three tracks, isn't it? Sometimes, to get a song like this on. This is the new one from I Like Trains, and this is called The Truth.
My story straight before we meet at lobby bar. Before we take this any further, before we tear this apart. While I hear you have them eating from the palm of your hand, I hear your grass is greener, I hear you're making a stand. They'll blow their bitter trumpets as I read the room. Repeat after me, is that the best you can do? Is that the best you can do? Is that the best you can do? Well, how much do you know? And how much can you give us? Well, how much do you know? And how much are they asking for? I'm not here to make friends. It's a means to an end. It's a means to an end. I'm not here to make friends. It is not something I would recommend. But equally well, I am not offended. Sure how we got here. The truth is, I'm not sure we can ever leave. The truth waits for no one. The truth is, I've never met or been in contact with that person in my life. The truth is, I don't remember. The truth is not what it was. The truth is ready when you are. The truth is all things to all men. The truth is all things to some men. The truth is where you draw the line. The truth is whatever you want it to be. The truth is a rabbit in a hat. The truth is a foreign language. The truth is your browsing history. The truth is a bitter pill. The truth is unpasteurized. The proof is in the pudding. The truth is neither here nor there. I suspect the truth lies somewhere in the middle. I suspect the truth lies somewhere in the middle. The truth is an unnamed source. The truth is not available for comment at this time. The truth is an infinite playlist. The truth is not what you expected. The truth has over 100 million views. The truth is unverified and unverifiable. But it is the truth if I say it is. The truth will not be televised. The truth is we're no longer sure it is my voice on those recordings. The truth is a sinking ship. The truth is a moot point. Cry me a river. The truth comes in different sizes. The truth is a no-nonsense haircut. The truth is around here somewhere. I remember having it, but not what I did with it. The truth is in a Moscow hotel room. The truth is hidden in a complex series of offshore companies. The truth is encrypted. The truth is a cold shower. The truth is I don't know what I'm doing, and I've been scratching around for somewhere to say it. The truth is a liquid lunch. The truth is your privacy is important to us. The truth is all of the above. Delete as applicable. Well, I keep friends in all the right places, and I'll feed you dirt on a need-to-know basis. Bathe me in soft light and capture my good side. If you get the drinks in, I will give it my all tonight. I'll work the room like I know what I'm doing. A picture of calm under a killing moon. My fingers are pins in my head is a ruin, but I'll work the room like I know what I'm doing. The truth is, I hold all the cards here. The truth is, I hold all the cards. recognize me. You will never see me again, and even if you did, you wouldn't recognize me.
Yeah, it's, if you watch the video for this, that kind of makes it, you know, as well. It's their first new material for about 8 years. I like Trains. I always quite liked I Like Trains. They were more in a sort of a post rock vein when they first came out.
Yeah,
but they were always concerned with like history. Whereas this new album that they've got planned called Compromat, which will be out later this year. Just checking. On the 21st of August on Atlantic Curve, is apparently about populism's rise from the divide and conquer tactics that have caused Brexit in the UK to the ascent of Trump in America and the subsequent reign of lies and misinformation. So, yeah, I think it's really prescient, and it's a brilliant video if you watch it.
Yeah.
It has all the stuff about Trump and the you know, the fake news and the disinformation campaign, you know, the Russia, everything that's been going on since 2016. And I also like the way it kind of changes it up for I Like Trains as well, because as I said, they were more of a expansive, more post rock outfit when they first came along, sort of more obsessed with like history and stuff like that. But now they're documenting the current affairs, which I like. But it kind of goes off into a more there are elements of like Talking Heads, I thought, almost like LCD sound system, things like that it was going off more with that kind of insistent bass line, you know, and the drums and everything. And the way he sort of inhabits that character of, you know, he becomes truth itself, doesn't he?
Exactly.
You know, it's like, you know, it's like a sort of diatribe, isn't it? But it's all about how truth is sort of dying away and truth no longer exists in democracy. And, you know, it's so prescient and it's brilliant, I think. I mean, it may go on a little bit long, but I think it's very, very well done. And I'm really glad they're back, because they're a good band.
I felt like it was, like you said, it's like you said, he's inhabiting a character. So it was like he was like the narrator.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's more of a companion with the video. Standing alone, like when I was just listening to it and I was going for a walk, wasn't quite present without the video. So it's almost like, definitely almost like he's narrating this.
I think maybe it'll work as part of an album, because they've got another one which is going to be on about special advisors coming out this week. So
okay.
I think each song is going to be, you know, about a specific part of populism, you know, and how it works. Yeah. So
idea. It does seem that it's quite a prevalent thing now that people are doing, that the bands are doing this. It's like trying to get the message across almost as clearly as they possibly can, doing almost like a spoken word thing. Because whilst this was obviously quite serious, while also being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, it did also remind me a little bit of Yard Act that I chose a few weeks ago.
Yeah, a little bit.
Kind of telling a story as well. I know you didn't like that, but I still like it. I mean, even more, listen to that a few times more. But it's kind of like telling that story in a very kind of narrative, storyteller kind of way, rather than almost singing it. You know, it's not...
Yeah, it almost reminded me like a cinematic thing, yeah. That's why I was thinking of Adam Curtis, you know, the documentary maker. He makes documentaries that are about politics, and his latest one was Hypernormalization. Basically, he makes documentaries about politics and how, you know, the interlinking corruption and the interlinking darkness of it all, and how it shot through with pieces of history and stuff like that. They're like video collages, really, like, you know, bits of history, bits of popular culture. And it kind of reminded me of that. There is a kind of filmic quality to it, isn't there?
Mm.
Where he's sort of, like you said, a narrator almost, like, and he also becomes the subject as well, doesn't he? It's almost like, I am the truth, you know? It's I am the truth, and truth is, you know, disintegrating, you know, kind of before your eyes, kind of thing. But yeah, there's kind of some jokey bit, or not jokey, but like humor, isn't there? Where he's like referencing, I've never seen that woman, or I've never seen that person in my life, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's like things that politicians do actually say, you know, that double speak that they actually use is kind of used in there. So, what are you giving it?
7.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it an 8 with the video. If you watch it with the video.
Yeah, okay. 7.5 with the video.
Yeah. I'm trying to avoid the 7.5 because it's a bit of a, anyway. I know, so on the first podcast we ever did, it was me that came up with the 7.5. So it's my
thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Well, it's my fault. So I listen back.
I can't blame
you. Anyway, you've got one more choice left in your new tracks, Jim.
Yeah. And my last new track of the week is by Soccer Mummy, and it's Indie Rockers.
Mommy is 22-year-old Nashville native Sophie Allison.
Sophie Allison, yeah, there you go. So, Sophie Allison, it's quite a, you know, a bit of a plain name, isn't it? So, to give yourself a bit of an impact, Soccer Mommy. But
well, there's quite a long tradition of having moniker, isn't there? You know, in American music, especially alternative music, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
even something like Bright Eyes, or you know, there's loads of them. Bonnie Prince Billy.
I suppose with Bright Eyes, was it really just kind of a burst in a band, or was it just him, you know?
Yeah, tricky one that, isn't it? I think it's just Yeah, it's Conor Burse and Mike Mogis.
It's a bit like Carsey Headrest and things like that as well.
Yeah. So. Anyway, but, sorry.
Yeah.
We're off on a tangent.
But that's fine. So this is, excuse me, part of her Soccer Mummy and Friends singles series, which is, this is volume 4. This one is with Andrew von, Wingarden. Andrew von Wingarden, from MGMT. His sort of solo persona is Gentle Dom. So this is, though, it'll come up if you sort of look for it. It's down as being Soccer Mummy and Gentle Dom. But she is covering, and I didn't realize this until not that long ago, that this was a cover of MGMT. She did say it's a deep dive, you know, a bit of a rare cut from the MGMT, because she thinks a lot of people have covered, you know, the more famous ones. But I couldn't necessarily tell you right now. But yeah, so this is actually a MGMT cover, and he does a remix of one of her most famous songs, Circle the Drain. So, but yeah, and actually listening to Circle the Drain, that weirdly sounds really like High by Feeder. But anyway, off the bit of a tangent. But yeah, so this, it's weird, because I was going to listen back to the original MGMT version of it, but I didn't get around to looking for it, because obviously it's a bit of a deeper cut. It wasn't one of the most obvious ones to find. But this, so I don't know what this compares to, how it compares, but the version that he did of Circus of the Drain is quite different and very, just like a very pop mix to it, which I don't think it really does it any favours, if you ask me. But this I do like, because it's kind of got this slacker rock, this American slacker rock thing to it, which walking through the park this morning with the sun beating down kind of almost made you feel like you were sort of on the west coast of America or something like that. It was quite evocative when you're in the right circumstances. And I did enjoy it. So the kind of, I do like that kind of dirty guitar sound, which they do quite well in on that side of the United States. But yeah, initially, because I don't know whether it is meant to be, the MGMT song is a bit of a piss take, you know, or against, you know, the indie glitterati or something like the glamorous indie rock and roll by the Killers before they became the ultimate, you know, indie.
Even though MGMT are probably part of that themselves.
Well, exactly, to a certain degree, aren't they? Yeah.
So.
I did like it. It was a bit more, a bit different to Archie normally. So I always sort of
quite
a little bit more with being a bit more theme pop. But having said that, Circle of the Drain does have an edge to it. So yeah, I'd probably check her out a bit more. I say I didn't necessarily.
I saw her a couple of years ago. And her stuff was more sort of Americana, the first album, I thought. Whereas the new one, Color Theory, from this year, like you said, Circle of the Drain was the big track off that. And there's a couple of good songs on it, but generally it didn't. They didn't live up to those two, I think. The two couple of songs I really liked on it.
Yeah.
But it was a bit more production on it. I think they were going more for like a 90s sound, from what I heard. You know, because she was on this podcast called Sound Exploder, where they go behind the scenes of a track, you know, and dissect it and stuff, how it was made, which is an interesting podcast actually. If you want to check it out. But after you've listened to all of the Show Me Magic episodes, of course.
But,
yeah, she was going on about, she was going for like a Sheryl Crow, torn, Natalie Imbruglia torn kind of vibe, with the guitars being high in the mix, you know, because you don't hear that as much now in pop music. Oh, yeah. The guitars being high in the mix. Interesting. And I quite like the idea of doing, you know, multiple EPs with different artists. She's done a couple, hasn't she, with, I'm just looking.
Yeah. Biba Doobie, yeah.
That's it, Biba Doobie, who I quite like. And there was another one with Jay Som as well.
There was the next one, apparently. It did say to be confirmed what it would be, but with Sasami, who her debut album was really, really good, that was out last year, I think it was. So
maybe this is her way of like promoting her friends and stuff, which is quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Indie rockers, yeah. It is a kind of play on that, you know, idea, isn't it? You know,
I think so, yeah. I think
writing an indie rock song called Indie Rockers, you know. BC Camplight was saying earlier,
if Hamer indie rock, what am I, or something
Yeah, something like that. Well, yeah, he's like proper DIY, isn't he, BC Camplight? Which is true. It's like, how do you define indie rock? I mean, Hamer, like, they're on a major label, or at least they seem to give the impression. But it's like indie, it's like, what do you mean by indie? Do you mean the sound? Like people say indie pop now? Or do you mean actual, you really indie as in, you know, independent, you know? 1975 would be another good example. You know, it's like, we're more cool than these other pop bands, you know, when really, no, you're not. You're you're just as, you know, you're just as pop as Boyzone, you know, let's be honest, you know. and often it's the pop is more like, you know, how much money they've had invested in them and how much time. But we could also get the other definition, as we said, of a sound, couldn't we? But I think things are often called indie pop now, when really they're just pop bands, you know. So why does it, where does the indie come from? Are they saying that they're just like taking bits of indie? Yeah, probably. But it's almost like that definition of a sound now has become a different thing, hasn't it?
Whether or not it gets played on Absolute or Radio X or something, it's just, you know.
No, that has to be from the 90s, mate.
Well, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, or it has to be a certain... It's, yeah, it's like a level, isn't there, of like indie bands who are so like big that they become pop. You know, there's levels, aren't there? There are levels. And that doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't mean they're any less worthy, but...
Quite.
It's like they're trying to attach a veneer of cool. That's what I'm trying to say. But I think there's something a little bit cynical about the way Blossom's doing, because it's almost like, oh, we're actually too cool to be a pop band, but actually we want pop hits. So there's that kind of dichotomy there, that kind of like contradiction, if that makes sense. It's almost like, oh, we're lads making real music, but actually they're making pop music. And there's nothing wrong with making pop music, but just admit it and just be a pop band. Why do you have to... Oh yeah, we're real. You know, we're real. We know. It's not like they've slogged through. They may have slogged through the clubs, but ultimately, what they make is just, you know, chart fodder, basically. So that doesn't make, to me, they're just as much a pop band as, you know, Girls Aloud or whatever. You know, to me, just because they're four blokes. But that, what they're doing is sort of dressing up in the kind of the clothes of indie, if that makes sense. Like they've got the Topshop T-shirt, but they. It's not actually real, is it? It's like, whereas you've got actually bands who are still on indie labels or are just doing it literally DIY that are indie bands. So I think what major labels have done is sort of co-opted the idea of indie in a way by sort of buying bands or signing bands.
They buy off then, like, magazines and they bag.
It can work the other way, can't it? It's like bands who originally were indie bands, then they go to pop, you know? So it can work the other way.
Yeah, but they don't say you're going to find the same sort of I'll say it's old tosh because I don't think there's much worthiness to Catfish in the Bottom and Blossoms and Bastion and stuff like that. So but the thing is they get sold off to Radio X and Absolute and
as if they're credible indie bands. Yeah, it's weird.
They get ploughed, you know, into the mainstream in through their A-list play. You know,
yeah. Really, when you think about it, this country is like built on like unusual characters who are in unusual bands, you know what I mean? Make it unusual sounds. I know Britpop probably changed that in a way, but you still had individual characters in the 80s and the 90s who made these bands like what they were, you know? Whereas now, all these people are just like much of a muchness, aren't they, really, to me?
Exactly.
I've got off on a real tangent here. I probably talked a lot of bollocks, but you know, It is an interesting idea, isn't it? That people can use those terms now, indie pop, but it's like, what does it mean anymore?
So what are we giving Sucker Mummy?
I'm going to give it, oh God, I did write down 7.5, but I think 7.
Yeah, I think 7 as well.
Yeah. So yeah, we're moving into the cult classic section of the podcast now, after a long chat about the nature of indie pop and indie. This is Lone Lady and this is Immaterial.
I'm in a waking dream.
believe this was her first ever single.
Okay.
Yeah, so Lone Lady is from Manchester, and her name is Julie Campbell. And I've been a fan since the first album, which was much more sort of stark and used like a drum machine and like elements of like guitar and stuff like that. Very, very art rock, you know, very post-punk art rock, that kind of new wave thing. And she is an interesting artist, so I definitely recommend people checking out. And that's kind of why I chose her, really. She's on my playlist of underappreciated artists. Yeah. She's on Warp as well, which was quite interesting because Warp don't always put out guitar music.
And, wow. That's slightly surprising.
I think they invested in her as, like, you know, as like an interesting artist. Yeah.
And
the first album came out 10 years ago now, Nerve Up. So, yeah, really, it's a recommendation of her, you know, as much as this song. But I still like this song, and it was her first single. So, and it still stuck with me. So, yeah, I just like the tune on it, really, I guess. I mean, she's got one called Groove It Out, which is, yeah, excellent. And it kind of goes, kind of burrows deep into that almost Gang of Four kind of bass lines and electronic sounds and stuff.
I was getting a little bit of sort of maybe Dolores O'Riordan vocally. She was, there's almost like a weird Irish inflection sometimes. You said she's from Manchester, but I don't know. But yeah, I'd never heard of her before. Say, Lone Lady would make sense. But yeah, no, I haven't gone back and checked out anything else yet. But yeah, it's quite nice.
Yeah, it's worth it. There was another artist called Theoretical Girl. Do you remember her? She was doing something similar probably before that with like a drum machine and just her playing. Yeah, I definitely recommend her as an artist to check out. Lone Lady, yeah. I'll kick it off and say an 8. Go on.
It's a 7 for me, I think.
Over to you for your cult classic, Jim.
My cult classic is by a ridiculously multi-talented chap by the name of Johnny Flynn. And this is Brown Trout Blues.
Time rolls the back wheels of my mind. You help me put the brakes on, 'cause you're kind. And I wonder where you learn to be so good. And I wonder if I'm doing the best I could. I could be somewhere else, I should be someone else, but you wouldn't know me if I was. You'd say I was a stranger just because you'd say I wasn't weak enough for you. You'd want me just to feel as you do too. I could be somewhere else, I should be someone else, but you shouldn't tell me what to do. I'll only take the brakes off if you do. And roll around like marbles on the floor. Please pick me up and roll me out the door. I could be somewhere else, I should be someone else by. Guess I'm happy as I am. Sometimes I find it hard to be a man. It's easier just to play the same old game. Of trying to forget my bloody name. I could be somewhere else, I should be someone else, but how are you? I'm Mr. I know what I'm called, it's just you got me, you got me, you got me. Stop.
Yeah, Johnny Flynn. I don't think as I've chosen him, because even though last time I saw him as he was packing out the Roundhouse, I sort of feel like he's sort of someone who's a bit on the periphery, really, because he did things like he did the soundtrack for the BBC comedy with Toby Jones and written by Mackenzie Crook, The Tectorists.
Oh, yeah.
And he even was in it. But he's actually an actor. He does a lot of stuff. He was just in a reworking of Emma. He does things like there's a rom-com series he did for Netflix called Love Sick, and he's done quite a few other bits and pieces. He's in, I think, he was playing a young Einstein in I think a Prime an Amazon thing called Einstein. He sort of, he does bits and bobs all over the place, but he's been a solo artist for a little while now. He's part of the Flynn dynasty, so his cousin, I think his cousin is Jerome Flynn, and but yeah, he's just sort of precocious.
He wasn't part of like the Mumford and Sons lot, was he?
No, I don't think so.
I'm mixing him up with someone else.
Having said that, I don't think he necessarily had anything to do with Mumford and Sons as such. Although early days, he did do a song with Laura Marling. When she was with
that must have been what it was.
Her backing band was Mumford and Sons, well, at least.
Oh well, yeah.
Marcus Mumford, anyway, he played the drums.
Well, I just wondered if he was part of that kind of scene, because there was a kind of scene.
Well, I don't know. I haven't really read much with it in conjunction with anything else or with anybody else. But yeah, he did The River, which is a gorgeous song he does with Laura Marling. But this is Brown Trout Blues from his debut, A Larum, from 2008. So it was a few years ago now. Apparently the title, because it's a bit of a weird name, is a joke that him and his dad, his late dad, had when he was a kid. They'd go fishing, and they'd always catch rainbow trout, but they'd never catch a brown trout. So they always made a joke that they've got the brown trout blues when they came back without it. So it was all just like an in-joke.
Yeah.
And it's the lyrics are basically, it's loosely based on wanting somebody or something to be a certain way in a relationship and wondering how it could change, but then realising you can't change someone, they have to change themselves, which is quite deep. It's just a really lovely song. He's got this really clever and sort of interesting way of taking sort of some kind of country blue making it more folky, but with the kind of rough edges where he's not overly concerned with being perfect, especially when he does it live. It's a really good live. It's a much bigger sound. And even when he does it on his own, he plays it with kind of a steel guitar, and he's brilliant live. I've seen him a couple of times. I saw him in a church in Brighton, which was amazing. That was one of my favorite gigs from a couple of years ago. He was introduced to me by my wife Jess, and we've seen him a few times. And his band's really good. He has quite a big band when he plays live. But yeah, I just don't think. I almost think, you know, does everyone know about him? And I think he's more of a sort of got an underground following.
It reminded me of like lying in a festival field or something, which we won't be doing this summer, will we? Unfortunately. But yeah, it's quite a wistful and reflective quality to it. And the guitars, like you say, I really like the finger picking guitars. It was reminding me slightly of Sweet Baboo. Yeah. I do like some folky stuff, but yeah. It's not generally my genre of choice. Like, I don't reach for it all the time. But I have got my fair amount of Nick Drake and Leonard Cohen and things like that in my collection, and Neil Young. So
without trying to sound derogatory, it's almost easy listening because it's easy to listen to. Right. I mean, easy listening is quite a derogatory thing to say. You know, it's kind of like, oh, as dull as ditch water. It's not the same thing as he always does. He can
you don't always want to be challenged, do you? Sometimes you want to just like have something that's going to be...
It's just got to be
nice to listen to, you know.
A good melody and a good song. And I do like blues as well. So that kind of take on it being a bit more sort of, I suppose it is kind of authentic because it's acoustic and it's kind of very country blues, but almost done in an English way.
I like that he was singing in his own voice because, like you said, sometimes in this kind of genre, I mean, in the sort of more folky and Americana genres.
Yes,
blues.
Exactly.
They often go for the American accent, don't they? Trying to ape the, you know, the obvious from overseas. Yeah. But this is quite like, you know, heartfelt, and you know, he's singing in his own voice and accent and everything. And that you could feel like quite like the story you told us about as well. So,
For me, that is an 8.
I'm going to give in and give it a 7.5.
Hey, I'm giving many of them this time.
Thanks for listening to Show Me Magic, God Is in the TV podcast. My name's Bill Cummings. I've been with Jim Orton.
Goodbye.
Till the next time. Ta-da.
Ta-da.
You've been listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV recommend show. Check out more on godisinthetvzine.co.uk. We're on our Twitter page, God Is in the TV. We're also on Facebook. Got us in the TV zine with a dot. Thanks for listening. Until the next time. Ta-da.